You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Tuesday to you. We appreciate you being here. Chip Souza's in studio with me today. A little bit later, we're going to talk to Anthony Christensen. He went down to Hot Springs this week for the Arkansas Basketball Coaches Association Clinic. He had a chance to talk with John Calipari and Mike Nabors while he was there. We'll hear what they had to say. And we'll also end the show today with Nate Thompson. He's Arkansas's baseball recruiting coordinator and hitting coach. We'll talk to him about a little bit of a new-look offensive approach the Razorbacks have this fall. But first, football, obviously, in September, that's what everybody's talking about. And everybody's talking about Hunter Yurecek today, and he caused a little bit of a stir when he went down to Little Rock for the Little Rock Touchdown Club on Monday with some of his comments, essentially for telling it like it is as it pertains to NIL. And we're going to play a little bit of an extended clip from that luncheon. David Basil, the director of the Touchdown Club, has given us permission to play that. But David asked Hunter about NIL, and Hunter essentially began with his take that we've heard before about NIL. He said, NIL started with good intent. Colleges found a loophole and began these collectives. And now he thinks NIL is used to buy players for what he called ridiculous amounts of money. Then he had to say this about Arkansas's NIL and how it compares with the rest of the SEC.
Now, we've finally gotten their footing at the University of Arkansas in the NIL world, but we're not where we need to be. I will tell you, the upper echelon of the SEC in football is probably spending double of what we're spending on our football program right now in the NIL space. That's reality. So, I mean, you can blame that on Sam Pittman, but it's not Sam Pittman's problem. It's his problem, but it's a money problem, right? Because if someone's spending double of what we're spending, they're going to have a corner on the market. And if we're going to compete, here's what I'd say, like if we're going to compete, and you gave me a chance to give a little sales pitch here. So Ole Miss, everybody loves that Ole Miss is in the top five, right? No, we hate it. We hate it. Ole Miss has about 5,000 members in their football collective. 5,000. We have about 1,000 in our football collective right now. They have 5,000 members. We have 1,000. If we're going to catch up, like I'm going to make it so easy for you. If we could get 10,000 households across the state of Arkansas to give $100 a month, 10,000 households to give $100 a month all year long, we would be in the NIL game from a football perspective. It's that simple. But we can't say the Tysons, the Waltons, the Stevens, the Hunts, hey, they'll take care of it. Because they're not. They're not. They are so incredibly generous, and they have done so much for our program. But if we're really going to get a handle on this NIL and remain competitive, we need to rally people across this state, and we really got to take some pride in the Razorbacks. So,
all right, so a lot to dissect there from what Hunter Yurecek said at the Little Rock Touchdown Club on Monday. Chip, the thing I've always, the last few years, I've used a Major League Baseball analogy to basically explain what we're seeing in college sports. It's large market versus small market philosophy. In baseball, you've got teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Mets, and you know, you probably even throw the Red Sox and the Astros, maybe the Cubs in there. You know, there are these teams that are in large markets, lots of TV sets, and therefore they have the most money to go out and field these all-star type teams. Teams like the Royals, they don't have that luxury. They are a small market team, and their pockets of success are going to be a lot more short-lived. Royals lost 106 games last year.
Yeah.
They may win the AL pennant this year, but what happens when Bobby Witt Jr. hits free agency and, you know, however many years that is away, they're probably not going to be able to retain him, and he's going to end up going somewhere else. And that's kind of what you're seeing in college football right now. You get teams that, you know, they might develop players really well, but then when a Chris Paul, you know, whenever you get him to a certain level, somebody else comes in and they give him a better opportunity. You know, the same case can be made with some of the players that Arkansas goes and gets. A Talen Green would be an example, I think.
Right.
You know, he's not going to get the same NIL opportunity at Boise State as he's going to get at Arkansas. But it's a money game. It's a money game. It's not the old way of doing things where you're the coach and you go out and you make the relationships. There's still some of that in recruiting. Still probably a lot of that in recruiting, you know, to be honest with you. But at some point it becomes a money game, and it feels like that's what the players are looking for. And the bottom line, I think what Hunter Yurecek is trying to get to there is that if you are not willing to spend what your competition is spending, then how can you expect the same results they're having?
So taking the NIL and comparing it to a salary for a Major League Baseball franchise, those franchises have a salary cap.
Major League Baseball does not have a salary cap.
They do have a cap. But if you go over that threshold, you have to pay a luxury tax. Okay, so the Yankees and teams like that, when they go over that threshold, they have to pay a luxury tax to the teams that are below that. So the Royals and other franchises like that benefit when the Yankees and the Dodgers and those teams spend that much money. So that benefits those smaller market teams. So it somewhat levels the field a little bit, but you know, when the Royals get a check for, let's say, you know, $15 million or whatever that is, that's still a long way from the $300 million salaries that the Dodgers are paying per year. But it does help level it out a little bit. My problem with NIL is not that players are getting paid. I have no problem with that, and I've long thought that they should be compensated. The problem is there's no guidelines. There's no end to it. There's no amount of money that a program like a Texas would pay to get a player. Maybe college football needs to come in and look at putting in a salary cap. Maybe there needs to be a cap that says it's going to be X amount of dollars per year, and if you go over that, you're going to write checks.
But you can't put a cap on NIL.
No, that's what I'm saying. There's no governing to it.
The antitrust laws are not going to allow you to put a cap on NIL. We're seeing this in the House case right now. There's a settlement between the House, three antitrust lawsuits, and basically all of them have been brought under the umbrella of House versus NCAA. And this settlement, they've taken it back to the federal judge now in the Northern District of California, Claudia Wilken, and her initial, you know, her preliminary hearing about this settlement said, I don't like the NIL language. The NIL language says that there's going to be a clearinghouse that's set up that basically is going to determine the legitimacy of NIL deals of $600 or more. And I think her point is there's no way that you can put a cap on what businesses want to pay an athlete for whatever it is they're paying him for.
Yeah,
it might be to go out and you know to promote their product. It might go to go speak at a nonprofit. It might be to make an appearance somewhere. But the bottom line is that if that provision is not taken out of the House settlement, I'm not sure the House settlement's going to be allowed to stand. And I just don't see a day where you're going to be able to go out to a private business and say, you can't spend your money for a value that you see fit.
Yeah. There needs to be some kind of governance. I don't know what that's going to be, but the schools that are going to suffer the most from that suffer the most from NIL are the Texas A&M Commerces and those smaller schools that basically have become de facto farm systems for larger colleges. I mean, take a look at the best players this year on Arkansas's football team: Talen Green, Armstrong. Some of the linebackers, I could go on and on and on. Jaquindon Jackson. Where did all those kids come from? They're all transfer portal kids who were coming here for
probably a little bit more
NIL money.
It is what it is.
So you take a look at that and you're like, well, you know, high school kids, you know, colleges, they're not building their programs with high school kids anymore. And you know, it's like, you know, Dabo Swinney's getting thrown under the bus because he says, I'm not going out into the transfer portal and getting kids. I want to develop high school kids. Well, look what that's done to Clemson. They're behind everybody now.
Mm. Arkansas is a small market team.
No question.
And small market, and when I say that, it's because of population. What's Arkansas's population compared to the teams that they're competing against? It's a relatively small alumni base. Alumni base is growing because the university is growing, but I mean, heck, when I came to the U of A, there were 17,000 students there. Compare that to what you've got at places like Texas A&M and Texas. And even now, you know, the University of Arkansas is somewhere in the low 30,000s.
Right.
Well, I mean, UT Austin is, what, 50, 60,000 enrollment?
60, and A&M's probably close to 80.
Yeah, I mean, so these and most of the schools, I think, in the SEC are bigger than Arkansas, you know, enrollment-wise, and they have been. Arkansas is a low-income state. I mean, Arkansas and Mississippi typically are 49 and 50, you know, when it comes to income. And Juracek used Ole Miss as an example. He said that their Grove Collective has about 5,000 members. Based on something I found yesterday, they think it's actually closer to about 6,000. Arkansas Edge, which we can get in, and we will, about maybe some of the missteps that Arkansas has made in terms of NIL and the programs that they've set up, has about 1,000.
Yeah.
What Ole Miss has done is, Ole Miss is a small market team too.
Right.
But there's a grassroots effort there at Ole Miss to say, hey, we know what we are. We're going to contribute, and we're going to fund our football team at a level that it's able to compete with the Texases and the Alabamas and the Georgias. And for the most part, they've been able to do that. I mean, if there was a 12-team playoff 3 years ago, Ole Miss would have been in 21.
If
there was one last year, they would have been in. So this is a program that's right there at the very top, and that dovetails right with when NIL became a thing.
Well, I mean, I think you made a good analogy a while ago comparing a small market program like Arkansas to a small market baseball like a Tampa Bay or a Kansas City, that those teams have been able to have success by developing players. It's all about player development. So they don't have the checkbook to go out and buy Shohei Ohtani or Mookie Betts like the Dodgers were able to do. They're having to develop those kids, and their sales pitch to those, you know, to those guys with the Royals is, you know, you're going to get to the big leagues faster with us, mm-hmm. you know, than you are. So that's Arkansas' sales pitch. Come here, and you're going to play.
A school like Arkansas, a school like Ole Miss even, it's all about development and evaluation,
yeah.
I think.
100% evaluation, absolutely. You can't miss many. You don't have the luxury to miss in the portal many times with those programs.
It's like the New York Yankees. If they draft the wrong player in the first round,
go buy another guy.
You just go buy a free agent.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's how things go in Major League Baseball. That's how things go at programs like Ohio State. Look at what they did in the portal
Correct.
This year. I mean, they went and they got Quinshon Judkins from Ole Miss. They got Caleb Downs from Alabama. I mean, you look at the portal class, Ohio State may have done better than anybody else. I don't know how he's doing right now. I know they had a couple of bad games. Oregon, they lose their quarterback. They just go get Dylan Gabriel, you know, from Oklahoma.
Well, look what Texas did. They lost their whole receiving corps, and they went out and bought a whole new receiving corps.
You can't do that at an Arkansas.
No.
You can't do that at a Mississippi State. Again, these small market teams, it's a tough conversation. If you want to win, you have to pay what it takes to win. But then you kind of look at the whole, you know, the whole picture. You've got a head coach at Arkansas who obviously is in a, you know, feels like a make or break season.
Yeah.
The economy is what it is. You're paying X amount for gas and for milk and everything. And it's a hard ask to go out and say, hey, will you give us $100 a month whenever, number one, you might not feel good about the state of the program. And number two, you know, you're looking at, hey, I got this and this and this I've got to pay
for
as well.
There goes the trip to Silver Dollar City that we had planned, you know, for the weekend. I mean, I get it. What Hunter Yurcheck is saying makes sense. It's what could be affordable in this state for some people. I don't know if 10,000 people a month, it's affordable
for
them.
You could put it a different way. You could say 20,000 people give $50 a month.
Then that's,
you could say 100,000 people give $10 a month. The point is that it's going to take a grassroots effort to make this work for Arkansas.
Well, and you look at the stadium, and he's right. You know, Tyson's name is on the field. Walmart's on the field. You know, you got the J.B. Hunt this and the whatever. I mean, our big companies, they give well above and beyond. It's not fair to go back and ask them, can you give another $10 million, you know, or whatever. It needs to be it's kind of a pay up or shut up kind of a thing. You either pay up and we get up here, or you shut up and we're going to be happy with 6-6 seasons. And that's what it boils down to.
I feel like Arkansas is in a chicken and egg scenario.
Yeah.
It's which comes first? Do more resources come first, or do more wins come first?
Man, it's that's a really a catch-22. I don't, I mean,
because I don't know that you can have one without the other.
Yeah, you got to have the money in place to go get the players you need, but then you need to produce in order to get those players to even look at you to begin with.
There's a lot of donor fatigue. I know that. I mean, because what's happening is that the collectives are going after the same pool of resources that the ticket office is going after.
Yeah.
And they're going after the same pool of resources that the scholarship fund is going after. And, you know, that well only runs so deep that some people say, I'm tapped out.
Done.
I can't do this anymore.
Done. Yeah. Yeah.
And not to mention, you know, the cost of being a fan goes up. Look at what's going on with ESPN right now. ESPN, you know, the ESPN Plus membership is going up.
Right.
I got an email about that yesterday.
Right.
You know, and all of these things, they benefit the school, but who pays for that? It's the fan.
The fans. It's always the fans. Yeah, it's always the fans are the de facto taxpayers. They're footing the bill for everything.
You see what Tennessee's doing?
No, I haven't seen that.
They announced yesterday that they are going to put a 10% talent fee on top of tickets. So that means if you're a Tennessee season ticket holder, and this goes into the revenue share conversation that might or might not go into place next year, depending on how this house settlement ends up. But let's say you're a season ticket holder and you're paying $500 a year for one season ticket.
Okay.
That means your season tickets are going to go up now to $550, and that extra 10% is going to basically help pay the revenue share that goes to the players. And I it's semantics about, is that what's going to the players or is it? The bottom line is these schools, they're about to start having to figure out, in addition to the $21-22 million in revenue share, and that number is going to go up every year, by the way, because media rights go up every year and it's a percentage, it's not a flat rate that they're going to be paying. In order to recoup that money, who's going to pay for it? It's going to be the fans, the donations. They're going to go out and they're going to try to find new ways of revenue, having a Walmart logo on the field, a Tyson logo on the field. I guarantee you that that's probably going to be on the basketball court too.
Yeah.
Might be on the baseball field when they play there in the spring. Or if it's not those two companies, maybe it's somebody else. They're going to find ways to do that. Maybe it's a jersey patch down the road. But
jersey's going to look like NASCAR.
hopefully a little bit more tactful. But they're going to find ways to recoup these fees that they're going to be paying to the athletes. I mean, business is what it is. And I just don't see – I can see where there's going to be some cutbacks and some cost-saving measures. Maybe – we've seen this at Texas A&M. They don't have as many senior associate athletic directors anymore. Some of those were laid off recently. But I just don't see business changing a whole lot after – maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't see it changing a whole lot after this goes into effect. It's what schools are going to do is they're going to be a lot more creative in going out and finding new streams of revenue.
Well, here's something else. We're talking about, Arkansas being a small market, and maybe they need to be looking at some of where these small colleges or whatever. How about, are you going to see these colleges expand their recruiting network to where, they're going to need to have more of an eye on these Texas A&M Commerce games or Bethune-Cookman or Jackson State or whatever, trying to find the quote-unquote diamond in the rough, like the expanded, Major League Baseball, scouting systems.
Hunter Yurecek's coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, by the way. That's going to be next Wednesday, September 25th at noon at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seats now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. You can be sure that we're going to have some conversations about this with Hunter whenever he comes up to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Let's talk about Arkansas-Auburn real quick. What are your thoughts on the game?
Well, it's Auburn. Hugh Freeze has seemed to have Arkansas's number at no matter where it is that he has coached. Recently. Yeah,
Brett Bielema had his number.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Wow. It's been a weird dynamic, too. Like, the home team hasn't fared as well when these two teams have played.
It's been the
road team that's kind of dominated. Auburn is sound. The Hank Brown. Wow, I mean, first start last week, and he had four touchdown passes. So I'm guessing Arkansas is just happy that the guy that played quarterback last year, Peyton Thorne, is not going to start this week.
Auburn's happy.
Arkansas won't have to face Peyton Thorne.
I think they might want to see Peyton Thorne though.
I don't know, man. He torched them last year.
Yeah, but did you see what he did against Cal?
Yeah. But I mean, I'm just basing it on last year. I mean, he was the difference last year. No doubt.
I mean, he threw four passes to the Bears in that game. The improvement last week was that Hank Brown, all of his passes went to Auburn players. You're right about the road team. It's been kind of a weird dynamic in the series. 2020 was a highway robbery. Arkansas got screwed at Auburn because of just a blown call, quite basically. Otherwise, they win that game. If that game is officiated correctly in my interpretation, then the road team would have won the last five games in the series. The last time a home team would have won would have been 2018 when Auburn won down there. It's an interesting game. I mean, I think the betting line is somewhere around 2.5 points right now, and that's down from where it opened.
Yeah.
It feels to me like it's just a total toss-up.
It's a
push. Both of these teams,
yeah.
They have so many questions, at multiple positions that you just don't know what you're going to get from either of them on Saturday.
Arkansas is going to have to do a better job of getting pressure on the quarterback. And I know the Oklahoma State game, they were geared up to stop, you know, Ollie Gordon. I mean, that's what they had to do.
And I don't think Ollie Gordon's what people thought he would. Did you see what TU did to him?
Well, yeah, he's definitely not playing.
He had the same number of carries for fewer yards against Tulsa than he did against Arkansas.
Wow. Well, they had you know, devised their game plan so much to stop that run game, and they did. They kind of, I guess, maybe gave up some of that, you know, pass rush in that game, not feeling like they needed it.
But I think they were scared to blitz that quarterback.
Yeah, and but that quarterback dropped back to pass 48 times and got no pressures and no sacks. This past week, I think they had a few more pressures on the UAB quarterback, only one sack. They got to figure out a way to get to the quarterback, and I don't know what they're going to do that, but they're going to have to get more pressure on the Auburn quarterback.
Because the pass coverage suffers whenever you can't
get
a pass rush.
No doubt.
I think that's what's happening right now in Arkansas' secondary, is that those corners and safeties and nickelbacks – and in some cases, they're being asked to hold their coverage for way too long.
Almost impossible to do.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to do. What's the injury situation looking like this week?
Well, we know that Patrick Kudus is going to be out. And I'm honestly at the point with Kudus that I just wonder if he's going to play at all this year.
Yeah,
I
was thinking
injury.
That same thing. He may want to take a medical redshirt if he can get that.
Hudson Clark is doubtful.
That'll hurt him on the back end.
I think it will.
Need that leadership.
You know, Clark is such an interesting player because people love to hate on him for whatever reason. But there's a reason he's a starter, right? I mean, there's a reason that he got that number one job. And so that means that there's probably going to be a drop-off from him to have whoever his backup is. And it's not lost on me, Chip, the fact that whenever he went out against Oklahoma State, that kind of dovetailed nicely with whenever they started to get some bigger plays in the passing game. UAB had a pretty nice day passing the ball the other day. Look, you know, whatever you think about Hudson Clark, if he's your best player, you want your best player on the field.
Well, and he is, and he's also the somewhat of the alignment supervisor. He makes sure the guys are aligned in the right way because you need that. You need that from the back end guy, and they're going to miss him. I mean, they're missing him, and they're going to miss him this week.
We'll get an SEC availability report this week from Arkansas for the first time because it's an SEC game.
That's right. Yeah.
So we'll see that Wednesday night. I think about 7 o'clock. Is when that comes out. You can check out our website at wholehogsports.com to see that availability report. You can get all the latest breaking news at wholehogsports.com. We think it's the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, the latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Right now, Anthony Christensen's got a story up about what he saw in Hot Springs with John Calipari and Mike Nabors at the coaches' convention, and we're going to talk with him about that here in just a second. You can subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Chip, we appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Anthony will be on desk with me here in just a moment. We'll talk about Razorback basketball, and Nate Thompson will be up a little bit later in our show, but first a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They're your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. They're located in Uptown Rogers. The staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. We said this before Chip stepped off the desk. I wanted to make one more point about NIL. I think Arkansas shares responsibility in its NIL troubles. The Razorbacks were slow to create an NIL collective. When they created an NIL collective, for whatever reason, that collective was dissolved, and they bring a new collective into the equation with Arkansas Eds last year. So there's a lot of, I don't know if blame is the right word, but there's a lot of nuance, I guess, to NIL and how it affects Arkansas football. I just wanted to mention that. Anthony Christensen is with us now. Anthony spent the weekend down in the Spa City. Did you go to any of the bathhouses?
I did not. No, I walked past some. I walked up some stairs and got to see some of the actual springs. So that was kind of fun.
Did you think about going to a bathhouse though? Like if you would have had an extra day, would you have gone to a bathhouse in hot springs?
I may have. it wasn't top of mind. I was more looking for food. but there were plenty. I walked past like three of them just on a morning walk. So there's plenty of options if you're looking for a spa or bathhouse in hot springs.
Did you go to Magic Springs?
I did not.
No. Okay.
I'm sorry.
You did stay at the Arlington Hotel, though. That was a...
I did, yes. And everybody who caught wind of that was like, oh, man, that place is haunted, or you got to read about Al Capone.
There's a lot of great history about hot springs. I read a book a couple of years ago. I think it was called The Vapors. And it was about, I think it kind of centered around a nightclub that I think might have been called The Vapor or The Vapors. In Hot Springs, but it just tells a great, fascinating story about the history of Hot Springs, and there's a lot of elements to the history of Hot Springs. You can talk about baseball, and the birth of spring training was actually in Hot Springs. They would send players like Babe Ruth there because he would go out and drink all off season, and so the Yankees thought that by sending him to Hot Springs, he could go and basically detox for two or three weeks, and so a lot of the great baseball players of all time used to go to Hot Springs and go through spring training in Hot Springs. And then, they got smart and figured out, hey, we can go to Florida mm-hmm. and we can go to Arizona, and the weather's a whole lot better in March than it is in Hot Springs, Arkansas. But you can do the baseball tour in Hot Springs too. Larry Foley, who's a mentor of mine, he did a great documentary on, I think it was called The First Boys of Spring. And it was about the history of Hot Springs baseball.
I'll make note of that for the next time I'm in Hot Springs.
Yeah, let's talk about basketball. That's why you're here. I know you're chopping at the bit to talk about what you heard and talked with John Calipari about yesterday in Hot Springs. What did he have to say to the coaches during this presentation?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of stuff we've already heard him talking about. How he ended up at Arkansas, and kind of talking about, oh, Trevin Brazil's better than I thought he was, or some other things along those lines, kind of talking about his philosophy, what he wants in a player, what he wants in a team, and stuff like that. What I thought was interesting was when he started kind of talking about analytics and kind of how a lot of college basketball is kind of trying to move away from the mid-range shot. And he kind of talked a bit about, didn't mean to hit the mic, I apologize if that made any noise, but he talked about how he doesn't want to abandon the mid-range shot because... I mean, you see a lot of the best players in the NBA. He pointed out Devin Booker a lot, having that as a viable option. And I don't want to say like he was like, saying down with analytics or anything like that, because I don't think that's what it was. But I think it was more him saying, like, even though this is something that, a lot of coaches are saying, we don't want to do this or we don't want to do that, just in terms of a mid-range shot, I think it's something that he wants to keep as an option, if that makes any sense.
Does he strike you as more of a feel coach?
Yeah.
Like he coaches based on feel, maybe more than what analytics would tell you.
I would say so. Yeah. Just especially kind of based on just what we heard from him on that, and just kind of how he talked about how he coaches. I mean, he talked a bit about how if he sees something that the players come up with, kind of work in a practice, he says, okay, yeah, we're going to try and run with that a bit. So I would definitely say so. Seems like he's, flexible. He wants to kind of, I guess, adapt to things that are working. I think, he, like you mentioned, like analytics is part of that.
Calipari seems like the type to me that he just plays the hits. Once he kind of figures out, what works in a setting, that's what you're going to hear. I mean, it's like, what we heard from him in Little Rock back in, what was it, April or May, mm-hmm. When he spoke to a group down there as part of the roadshow, that's the same thing that I basically heard him say when he was speaking to the father-son camp in mm-hmm. June. the same thing that maybe we hear him say on the Dan Patrick Show or Jim Rome. Maybe the same thing that you heard down in Hot Springs. I mean, you get that feeling?
Absolutely, yes.
The point being that did you learn a whole lot new being there and listening to him?
Not a ton new just from listening to him, just because, like you said, he does play the hits, if you will, just because, you know, he commands a room. And, you know, even though he's, you know, I've heard him say some of the same things, you know, 3-4 times now. Mm-hmm. you know, he's still, you know, he captivates an audience, which, I mean, that's a credit to him. So I didn't hear him say anything new, but what did kind of come out that I kind of found interesting was, you know, it's a coaching clinic, so he's there to give pointers on coaching. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there was some practice footage we got to see, and, you know, a lot of it centered around Boogie Fland, which kind of, I mean, obviously it's September, so we're not going to know, you know, this player is going to play this much or this player is going to do that or this or that. But it seemed like almost every clip from the video, you know, had Boogie Fland doing something. Uh-huh. So that tells me that, you know, maybe he's going to be a big part of it. And then Adu Thierro is another one who was, you know, clipped up a lot. One of the clips showed Adu Thierro dunking, and then you just heard a lot of the coaches behind me, because I was sitting in the front row, just kind of start to talk among themselves like, oh, wow, look at that. Hmm. But, yeah, so nothing necessarily new in terms of what he said, but we did get to see some of that, which I found pretty interesting.
Am I right that basketball preseason practice begins next Wednesday?
I believe that is the case, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's 42 days before the season begins. In Arkansas, they haven't given a schedule, but we've talked about this before, that we think we have all of the dates for the Razorbacks in this upcoming season. And if we're correct, Lipscomb on November 6th would be their first game. We're working on the Hogs Illustrated basketball preview right now. Anthony's been hard at work on this for several weeks now. You can stay on top of all the Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Subscription will give you 20-plus issues of Hogs Illustrated every year. That gives you full access to our website, too, at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join the Hogs Illustrated team right now. hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. That's 479-684-5509 to get on board here with Hogs Illustrated before our basketball preview comes out. We've been talking about this for a few weeks. This is something that you're probably not going to see anywhere else about Razorback basketball, anything quite this in-depth and large of a spread, and we're excited about putting that out. It'll include some women's basketball. Mike Neighbors was also there mm-hmm. on Sunday.
Yes.
You talked to him. What did he have to say?
Yeah, so I actually found Mike Neighbors' presentation, lecture, whatever you want to call it. It was one of the more interesting ones that I sat in on. And obviously I was there to talk to him and write about him and everything along those lines, along with John Calipari. But I still sat in on, you know, a lot of the lectures just because I, you know, I'm still, you know, I like to learn about basketball. I think it helps me with my writing. So I listened in on a lot of other things. But he, instead of, you know, pointing out like, okay, this is, you know, something that I do that works a lot, or these are the sets I run that work a ton, he actually decided to focus on, this is something, these are things in every game that I've ever lost that I did wrong that led to this loss, which I found very interesting. And one of the more interesting things that I kind of encountered over the 2 days I was in there, just because I found it kind of enlightening. Like, you know, he said, you know, if I were giving a lecture on all of the wins I've done or I've had, then I would change I to we, so as to give credit to the team as opposed to take the fall, if that makes sense. And every single one of the, I believe it was 134 bullet points for each loss he's had in his head coaching career, every single one of them started with I and then, you know, explanation did mm-hmm. this. So I found that very interesting.
So what were some of the things that maybe popped up more than others?
They were all individual. Like, he didn't, like, you know, make sure that it was, he made sure that it was a different thing for every single one of them, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So as to, I guess, keep people engaged or something like that. But I found it interesting, you know, and he, you know, kind of talked through some of them. And one of the things I found interesting was, you know, he said, yeah, not all wins are created equal, but not all losses are created equal. Because he pointed out mm-hmm. one loss when he was at Washington, I believe it was at Cal, which the night before he took the team to go watch or go to Hamilton, the play. And he said, you know, I don't regret that because, you know, when you talk to that team now, they look back at that as one of their best experiences in college basketball was going and seeing Hamilton with their team, which I thought was pretty interesting to hear. But I mean, it was interesting to hear him just kind of explain like, okay, I did this in the Final Four against Syracuse and that's why we lost, or I did this against, you know, LSU and that's why we lost, and stuff along those lines.
The expectations that the women's basketball team is probably going to be picked at least in the bottom half of the SEC this year, just based on who they've lost, and a number of different factors. I thought it was interesting, one of the things he said. He said that, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically it was like, we may not do anything great this year, but I think we can do X number of things good or really well.
Yeah, he did say that. I mean, one of the things that I thought was I just bumped this little tray down here. Apologies. That's why I flinched. One of the things that, you know, obviously I only got like a half a season of watching the team end before the season ended because I got here in January. But, I mean, that team was very, very heavily reliant on the three-point ball and everything along those lines. So I, from what I kind of gathered and what he said, you know, it seems like this team's going to be more well-versed or more, I guess, diverse in their ways that they're going to be able to attack the basket or try to get points or stuff like that. It'll be interesting because, like you said, I mean, I don't think the outside expectations are very high for this team. But, you know, he seems excited about it. He seems to think they've got some depth. And like you said, he seems like he thinks that they've got a versatile, you know, a lot of ways to kind of go about playing.
I believe their season begins November 4th, the first night that you can play.
Yes, against Fairfield, if I'm remembering correctly, which is a tough game to start with because, I mean, that's a Fairfield team that I believe lost two games all last season, coming in on a MAAC title, lost to Indiana in the NCAA tournament. But that's a good team. They return a lot, same coaching staff, a lot of the same players. So it'll be a good test for them. You know, night one.
I mean, they've got some pretty tough games on their schedule this year, including going to UCLA, who's going to be one of the top teams in the country. You can read all of Anthony's basketball coverage at WholeHogSports.com. You can either click his picture down at the bottom of the page, or at the top, you can just click on the basketball tab. Hope you'll check that out. When we come back, Nate Thompson, the Arkansas baseball assistant coach, hitting coach and recruiting coordinator, will be with us. We'll talk about Razorback fall ball, but first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass. For all your glass market needs with the highest quality products, come by and see them today at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We're joined now by Nate Thompson. He's the Arkansas hitting coach and recruiting coordinator for the Razorback baseball team. Entering year eight, and Nate, you and I were talking about it. Man, it's funny how fast time flies. It seems like just yesterday you were getting in.
Yeah, no, it's been a great experience. I love being here. Nothing like being a Razorback and working with this staff and Coach Van Horn. And it's time goes by fast when you're having fun.
I didn't get to see the first weekend of scrimmaging because I was over in Oklahoma for football. But I did hang out at the ballpark a couple of days this last weekend. And, you know, it really just – what struck me, Nate, was how different this offense looks, what you guys are doing, how you're constructing your scrimmages, whether it be starting an inning with, you know, two runners on and nobody out, and seeing, you know, what both, how both sides handle it. Just for people who haven't been out to the ballpark and they've seen you here these last couple of weekends, how would you explain how things look different?
Yeah, I mean, we are trying to play to our athletes, and we feel like with the athletes that we have here right now that your intent's always going to be to drive the baseball and hit the baseball hard. But at the same time, you know, how advantageous and effective can we be on the bases? Mm-hmm. How disruptive can we be? And that's good for our pitching staff, too, to learn how to handle that and deal with that and manage it. And so, yeah, we've been trying to create more offense with our feet and just being a, I don't know, more multiple, more attacking type offense. And so, yeah, it's been good to see so far. The guys are embracing it, and, yeah, they're excited about it.
Dave Van Horn said the other day that, you know, the first thing you guys are doing right out of stretch lines is you're going and putting an emphasis on running the bases, and that you're really trying to maybe make a point with that, that this is going to be a really important part of this team.
Yeah, you know, everybody loves to hit. You know, if you talk to guys, position players, they love to hit. And so by constructing practice in a manner that, you know, you put for, you know, maybe you put, so to speak, first things first, or you put a little more emphasis on something early in the day. It's really important to us. We're going to make it a point, and it's something we're going to you know, try to get better at daily. It's not something we're going to touch on once in a while. It's something we're going to touch on at the beginning of every day. And whether that's, you know, working on steel breaks, going first to third, taking the extra base, being advantageous in general, or dirt ball reads. Yeah, we're working on all of it at the beginning of each day.
We heard Dave talk about this at the end of the season after you guys lost to SEMO at the regional. He said that, you know, there was already, you know, talk among the staff about recruiting a different kind of athlete for this year. Just talk about what kind of athletes you were going after, and maybe how that differs from what you've looked for in past years in the portal.
I don't know if it differs a ton. I mean, we've been looking to add athletes that, you know, make hard contact, certainly, but can run the bases effectively and put pressure on a defense in multiple ways. And I guess maybe we're just spending a little extra time with it right now and trying to, you know, show our players how important it is. You know, if you look back at our 2019 season, during the fall of 2018, heading into that year, you know, we had lost 6 out of the 9 starters from that 2018 team's lineup. We were returning Heston Kerstad, Casey Martin, and Dominic Fletcher. And so we added a lot of new guys, and we knew we had speed. We had athleticism. And so we made it a point of working on it really hard throughout the year. And then it really showed up early in that season of 2019. And we think it helped us get off to a good start with the bats as well. And so, you know, it adds another element and adds something for the opposition to have to pay attention to and care about. And if you get the opposing pitcher to divide his attention a little bit, that can be a good thing. We're getting better pitches to hit, and good thing overall for the offense.
Do you think this is going to be a team that runs more?
Yes.
Why so?
I think we have the guys to do it, and we're just training it, and we're getting more comfortable with it, you know, and so the guys will be ready to show what they can do, you know, come February.
You know, you saw a couple of teams late last year, Kentucky and Kansas State, who were just all over the base pads. Now, Hagan Smith held Kansas State in check for the most part. They didn't really run on him much. In fact, I think maybe the only time they ran, they got thrown out at second base. But you look at Kentucky last year, they led the league by a good margin in sack bunts and stolen bases. They end up sharing the league title. They end up going to Omaha. When you see that kind of success, does it affect you at all? Maybe like, hey, we could kind of take a little bit of that element too?
I think our biggest thing is just doing whatever it takes to be more offensive. And whether that's, you know, standing at the plate and hitting or using our feet. We're just looking to create more runs one way or another. And so, yeah, certainly Kentucky was very good at it last year. They do a very good job there. Vanderbilt's another team in the league that's done it for years. Oklahoma's a team coming into the league that has really done a nice job on the bases. TCU isn't in the SEC, but is a team that we played in the past that was some you had to contend with it. You had it. It made you prepare more as a defense, and so we want people to have to respect that aspect of our game as well, more and more.
How do you think the players have embraced this? Because when we were talking to Dave the other day, he said that you can you might want to do this, but it really takes a player buy-in to be able to run this type of offense in the SEC.
You just got to show them the value of it, I think. Because players want to do what's going to help them be successful and help the team win. They really do. And so when you show them the value of it, and they can see that, yeah, we're going to be more dangerous this way. We're going to get better pitches to hit because the defense has to respect our speed and our opportunistic nature. Then, yeah, we're going to be better for it. And so they've been buying in, working hard at it. And we have guys who, you know, a lot of the guys that transferred in or you know, whether it was from junior college or from the portal, maybe they're a little used to that already. They worked on that where they came from. So they're bringing us some ideas and thoughts there as well that we've been able to implement and share with the guys too. So, yeah, we're trying to get better together.
Nate, I want to ask you about your offensive philosophy because this is some stuff that we've talked about. And I know, you know, anytime offense doesn't go well, people say, hey, Arkansas is swinging for the fences. And I know you've heard that. That's not what you're doing. You're trying to hit line drives, you know, hit stuff into the alleys. And if it flies over the fence, that's what happens. But I wonder if you can kind of elaborate on that.
Well, for instance, something we've been doing this fall, as well as the base running thing, is within each game, we have game goals. And, you know, it depends on how long the game is, but we're looking to, you know, check the box of so many times throughout a scrimmage for each team, hitting a ball over 95 miles an hour. And that could be a ground ball. That could be a line drive. That could be a ball that gets over the fence. But with less than two strikes, you know, you go to the plate hunting a pitch, hunting a location, and you're looking to play your game and do damage. And that depends on the individual, certainly. You know, guys that are more run-based ball player type guys, they're not going to be, you know, trying to hit as many doubles, you could say, with that approach. Guys that are more power-oriented are going to be trying to bang walls with the baseball. But yeah, you're going to the plate. You're looking to get your best swing off on something that you can drive and playing fearlessly because, you know, we want to hit the ball hard early in counts. That's proven out throughout Major League Baseball and throughout collegiate baseball statistics that, you know, typically the team that hits the ball hardest, the most throughout a game, well, they typically win. And so now that doesn't necessarily mean hitting home runs. We like to hit home runs, but we like doubles too. And we like hard hit singles. And so, but early in counts, you're looking to drive the baseball. And then with two strikes, there's always an adjustment, you know, and that is to cut down, to get off the knob of the bat, to maybe go to a late timing approach or to have to sit a different type of pitch based on what you're going to get, because you don't hold the cards anymore. You know, a swing and miss ends your day. A taking of a strike ends your day with that particular at bat. And so you're looking to put the ball in play and, you know, continue the at bat. And so, yeah, that hopefully that makes some sense there as far as, you know, early counts, you play a little more fearlessly, late in at bats. You have to defend a little more and, you know, try to take breaking balls the other way, that sort of thing.
I want to ask you about some of the players that have stood out to me over either watching the scrimmages or maybe what they did during the summer. The first is Brent Iredell. He's a transfer from New Mexico Junior College. He's from Australia, a third baseman. And we were watching the scrimmage the other day, Oliver, Greg, and I were, and, you know, the conversation was he looks kind of like Jared Wagner. No, he looks like Caleb Kelly. The point being that he's an older, experienced bat from the right side who has a ton of talent in that bat, a bunch of power. Based on the stats that I've seen, I think it's four home runs that he's had through four scrimmages, at least a couple of doubles. The question's always there about how does a junior college bat translate to seeing better pitching, but it seems like he's handled it pretty well so far.
Yeah, no, he's done fantastic so far. I think, yeah, your numbers are correct right there. He's got four doubles and two homers through the first four scrimmages. And he's just got a really nice approach where he's trying to drive the baseball in the middle of the field. And, you know, he's not over swinging, but he's getting to hard contact. Mm. And he has great direction with his swing. He does have very, very strong opposite field power. And that was evidenced on Sunday. I think he hit a ball midway up the scoreboard to the opposite field. And but he can also catch a breaking ball out front and take it into the hog pen as well. So confident guy, like you said, a little older. He has experience of playing at the collegiate level, not in the SEC, but he's a really good player. I mean, yeah, the Australian national team is a group that, you know, I mean, they're looking at him strongly. You know, I mean, he could be playing in a World Cup over in China right now type thing if he wasn't with us. So we're certainly excited about him, and he's a guy that, you know, we're glad to have and we believe is going to do good things here.
How's his defense?
It's solid. It's solid. His feet move pretty well. His throws are pretty darn accurate. He's shown well thus far. I think he's got confidence there.
I want to ask you about a couple of other newcomers. Charles Davalon, center fielder from Florida Gulf Coast, and Cam Kozel, second baseman from Vanderbilt.
Yeah, Charles came to us from, like you said, Florida Gulf Coast. He's a Canadian. Finished up high school down in Florida so he could play a little more baseball. Went to Gulf Coast, had a really good freshman year. When he got in the portal, we reached out, built a relationship with him. And, yeah, we're super excited about him. He's the kind of guy that hit for a solid average last year at Gulf Coast, but drove the baseball as well and showed speed. And that's like another thing that we were looking for in the portal, certainly. And we knew that he was pretty versatile. You know, he played a lot of second base last year at Gulf Coast, even though that's not necessarily what we're looking for with him here, but he can play all over in the outfield. And like I said, he brings an element of power and speed to the plate, as well as a confidence that we really like. As far as Cam Kozel goes, Cam's a young man that we recruited throughout high school, developed a strong relationship with him. You know, he ended up picking Vanderbilt. And then obviously when he got in the portal, that was someone we reached back out to. With the departure of, you know, Peyton Stovall leaving the program, you know, we knew that Cam, you know, had a strong history at second base and a strong bat. I mean, if you look at the numbers throughout SEC play last year, he was one of the better freshmen in the league with the bat. And, you know, maybe it was a little up and down at times and in and out of the lineup, but in this day and age of college baseball, it's harder and harder to get on the field as a freshman. And I thought it was very impressive what he did at Vandy. I know what kind of person he is. He's an extremely diligent guy, hard worker. And so, you know, the kind of guy you want in your program. We wanted him the first time around, and we've had that happen a few times over the years where, you know, maybe you don't get a kid out of high school and he ends up getting in the portal and coming back to us. And yeah, we're excited about him as well and what he's capable of here.
That's why it's so important to not burn bridges when they decide to go elsewhere. You know, both of those players went to Cape Cod. They had real good summers up there. You had a lot of hitters, you know, whether it be players who were transferring in or players who were already in the program who had great summers. Aloy, Vahiva Aloy, obviously one of them. Talk about what he has done to change his swing, because it's a different stance that he's got. And it looks to me, Nate, like something that he's done with his hands, he's able to maybe go out and get those balls away from away from him a little bit better than he was last year?
It was something that we started playing with a little bit toward the middle and the end of the season last year with a few guys in training. And Vahiva didn't necessarily get in on too much of that at that time. But when he went off to summer ball, you know, that's a good time to be trying some things. And so, yeah, he raised his hands up a little bit, has a little more of a stretch or a lean back in his posture early. And he's creating great whip throughout the zone. And it's helping him, I think, stay on balls even a little more than maybe he was before. And, you know, hitters, they got to try different things sometimes in different fields to figure out what works best. And so that was exciting to see him be able to go to the Cape and make that adjustment and find something that he really likes and that works for him. And obviously he's an incredibly talented guy. And so, he's done nothing but bring it back here with him this fall. So we're pumped about that.
And Vahiva left in early July, and that opened the door for Ryder Helfrich to win all the offensive awards, right? I mean, he led the league in home runs, led him in RBI. I think he was second to Vahiva when Vahiva came home. Just talk about the type of improvement that he's made.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, you know, Ryder's numbers last year didn't look great from a statistical standpoint. But I think if people looked at some of the batted ball metrics that we had, they would have seen that his expected outcomes would have been a lot better than that over time. And, you know, obviously he was in and out of the lineup and that sort of thing. He hit a lot of balls very hard last year that found gloves. Needed to probably get those balls in the air a little more instead of being ground balls. But he went off to the Cape, continued to work on it. He changed some stuff too, got rid of a little bit of his leg kick, went to more of a spread out stance, and has found what's been working for him. And that, you know, he's such a hard worker. Honestly, he's incredibly tough on himself and maybe sometimes too tough. You know, it was just great to see him get the at-bats he needed, mature at the plate, and come back and ready to take that next step in his career.
Now, there's two baseball leagues on Cape Cod. There's the Cape Cod League, which everybody knows and kind of agrees that's the best summer baseball league. There's another one called the New England Baseball League, and Reese Robinette played there for Martha's Vineyard this summer. I think he was an all-star in that league. And it seems like every time I see him scrimmage, Nate, he's making a play. He's in a home run. He's hitting a double, maybe making a nice play over at third. What does he need to do to be able to get into the lineup? Because, I mean, that's been the struggle for him the first couple of years.
I think continue to do what he's doing right now, playing really solid, strong defense at, you know, third base or at first base, whatever corner he's at, and swing the bat, you know, hitters play. And he had a great summer up there in New England at Martha's Vineyard, hit several home runs. I think he fell just shy of double digits up there, but has really grown in his approach. And you know, I got to give Reese a lot of credit. You know, he worked really hard in the weight room this last spring while he was redshirting, made a nice move there with his strength development. And it showed yet the other day in the scrimmage when he drove a ball at about 18 degrees, which is pretty much just a line drive. Mm-hmm. Hit at 110 miles an hour. Probably the hardest contact he's ever made as a Razorback, whether it was in an inter squad or a real game, and drove the ball out of the park. So that was awesome to see. You know, he was humble all throughout the process last year, and he's a worker, and you know, his teammates really like him too. And so, you know, it's just great to see a guy who's, you know, keeps his nose to the grindstone and is, you know, making a move for himself as he is. It's well earned.
It feels to me like you've got a lot of offensive players who maybe in another season they're a starter, no question about it. You've got a lot of depth on this team, and it's going to be hard to get in the lineup, but that's kind of been the case, I guess, for a few years. The depth has been pretty good from a position side, and I feel like, Nate, that's what has helped you guys stay in contention, whether it be for SEC regular season titles or SEC West titles. You know, obviously you've had national seeds. It's been that depth where take Reese Robinette. If he doesn't come off the bench and hit a 3-run home run for you at LSU a couple of years ago, you may not win that game. Or Hunter Grimes, the throw that he makes from left field that throws out a base runner in the seventh inning of a tied game against Texas A&M. You've really been able to rely on that depth to make some key plays for you that make a difference in a tight race.
Yeah, you know, you're always looking for to have as many quality players as you can in the program every year, every opportunity you get. And so it also comes down to having guys that are just really bought in on being a Razorback also. I look at, if you go back to 2023, you know, Ben McLaughlin and Peyton Holt, guys who came off the bench for us during the second half of the season when injury struck, you know, when Peyton Stovall and Jared Wagner went down. And truthfully, our offense didn't miss much of a beat because those guys are good and they were ready to go. And yeah, I mean, they really wanted to be here. They could have gone to other places, maybe gotten more scholarship money, all that sort of thing. But because of the opportunity to be, you know, a Razorback, to be a part of Dave Van Horn's program, to be a part of a winner, they came here instead of doing other things. And it's something that if you can have some guys like that are very unselfish too, coming off the bench, then you don't have to slow down when injuries happen.
Nate, we'll get you out of here on this. There's a lot of talk today about NIL and how it affects football. I know it's a different sport, but from a baseball perspective, because you're the recruiting coordinator, how much does this get brought up in recruiting when you're going out and talking to players?
It's always there. It's always there now. It's kind of a commonplace thing. You know, a couple of years ago, it wasn't. It was something that you could, you know, I don't know, maybe get away with not talking about. But nowadays, it's not. Mm. You know, whether, you know, it doesn't even matter if you're talking about with high school kids or with portal type players. There's going to be that element, and thankfully, you know, we've been doing pretty well there. We feel like, and it's helped us to, you know, bring in some of the type talent we've gotten over the last few years and put us in a position. The other thing is too, is it helps us keep our players. Mm. You know, if you look around the college baseball landscape, there are players that are having pretty darn good years at places. And you're kind of surprised when they leave to go pursue opportunities, I guess you could say financially, in the portal. And, you know, thankfully, this is the type of place where guys want to be, and we've been fortunate to have the resources that we do to go out and to stay strong there. So it's an added element for sure, but you know, I feel like it's certainly been a help to us.
How often do you think it is the determining factor?
It's a good question. I mean, I guess it's hard to say. You know, the truth is, you know, nobody's going around saying it's all about the money, right? People don't, you know, kids don't do that. Professionals don't do that. But if all things are apples to apples, you know, it's kind of like we used to tell kids all the time too, hey, you know, if everything's the same and we're recruiting the same player, you know, the guy with the better grades, you know, the guy that we're going to have to worry about less off the field, the guy that's lower maintenance is probably going to get the nod. And so, you know, the cool thing is for us is, you know, we've been able to beat some programs for players here lately. And they've been throwing out more money. You know, there's been some crazy amounts that have been going around, so to speak. And we've been able to, because of the facilities we have, because of Coach Van Horn and, you know, and what he brings to the table, because of the development factor that's here with draft picks and our success in the draft for our players and the type of money that our guys have been making, have been able to, beat some teams for less, I guess you could say. And so, but I don't think you can, you know, you can't go to a gunfight without one. You know what I mean? So
that's right. No, I totally understand. Can't go to a recruiting war without some cash in your back pocket. I think that's probably what you're saying without saying it. Nate, you've been great. You've been great with your time. Appreciate you being on here, and we'll see you out at the ballpark this weekend.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Okay. Thank you. Nate Thompson, the hitting coach and recruiting coordinator of the Razorbacks. We appreciate him being with us, and we appreciate you being here. We'll have another podcast tomorrow as we continue to look forward to Arkansas and Auburn. Until then, hope you'll join us at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everyone.